May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. So 2019 draws to a close, and not only this year, but the second decade of the 21st century. And I'm sure that for all of us here, it will have had its share of happy moments as well as sad and difficult ones. The Queen described it as a bumpy year. I could come up with something rather worse, which I won't repeat. I don't think I've had a year like this before, and I can only hope that next year's better. On the national stage, there were sporting achievements to celebrate. England winning the Cricket World Cup and coming close to winning the Rugby World Cup, but you just wait till you meet Wales in the Six Nations in the new year. And at a local level, who could forget seeing the city centre turned green and yellow to celebrate the Canaries' promotion to the Premier League? And don't worry, even if we are relegated, we're still proud. And as in any year, there have been some anniversaries to remember. 200 years since Peterloo, which of course was probably an event unfamiliar to an awful lot of people, but important in its way in the long struggle to gain the democracy which we now take for granted. 100 years since the Treaty of Versailles, which ended the First World War and redrew much of the map of Europe to create what we have now. And sadly, 80 years since the outbreak of the Second World War, which unfortunately was largely the result of the treaty getting things wrong. And finally, 75 years since the D-Day landings, which began the final phase of that war. And I think all those three anniversaries should remind us of the need for peace and cooperation rather than conflict between nations. And then, of course, there has been all the political stuff. As a keen student of history and married to a professional historian, I often wonder what future generations will make of what is, for us, the present. What patterns and trends will they discern? And how will they define the age in which we live? I feel very sorry for students who will have to study the political scene of 2019. For surely, we are, and have been for the last couple of years, been living in the era of Brexit. I'm sure that's what it'll be called. A process which, of course, began 3.5 years ago, but it will indeed be going on yet, as the UK's new relationship with Europe and with other countries in the world is hammered out. As yet, despite the Prime Minister's promise of a new golden age, the future is still unclear. And for me, it recalled the opening words of a poem by M.L. Haskins that was read by King George VI, many of you will know this, in his Christmas broadcast of 1939. And I said to the man who stood at the gate of the year, "Give me a light that I may tread into the unknown." Now, the three Bible passages we heard this morning are often used alongside others at various times in the church year. They're all familiar to us. But when you put them together as a group, they are actually quite interesting. And they provide a very strong message of hope and reassurance, which I think is particularly relevant at New Year. And they give us something to hold on to, and I hope to take away with us this morning. At least two of the passages, that from Ecclesiastes and Revelation, were written for people who were facing adversity, which is why I think they can give us much to reflect upon in our own time. So I've got three thoughts to go with the readings to share this morning. And the first one is this: however important earthly power appears to be, in the form of governments, politicians, big business, you name it, there is actually a much greater divine power which overarches them all. And I think it's a pity that so many in the world don't realise this. Psalm 8 reminded us, "O Lord, our sovereign, how majestic is your name in all the earth. When I look at the heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars that you have established, what are human beings that you are mindful of them? Mortals that you care for them? We're just minnows, aren't we, in comparison? The psalmist reminds us that above and beyond our very human concerns with the complications of life, whether personally or more widely, there is a bigger picture, which is very much in the hands of God. A God who may be all-powerful, and that's one side which we mustn't forget, but who also loves us, little as we are in the great scheme of things. But we also need to recognise that God's time is not our time, and so we have to trust in his divine providence. Which brings us to my second thought. A phrase which has been much used over the past 3 years or so is take back control. It's the result, of course, of feeling that we're at the mercy of other people's decisions and choices, and that the average person has no say. This obviously came very much to the fore in the recent election campaign, and indeed in the referendum itself, when people said, well, you're giving me the opportunity to express my opinion, so I will. But the gap between politicians and voters, it would seem, has grown ever wider over the years. And yet, as the writer of Ecclesiastes knew well over 2,000 years ago, however much we may yearn to take control of our lives, it's not always possible. Ecclesiastes is quite a short book, and it's really someone trying to make sense of life with all its ups and downs and comings and goings and complications, trying to make some sense of it, when indeed sometimes you can't make sense of it. There are things that you cannot make sense of. For one thing, we're all aware that however much we may wish it to be otherwise, nothing is in fact permanent, hence, you know, a time for this and a time for that. Of course, we prefer familiarity and certainty. We like to feel safe. We like to know what we're doing. We like to know what something is about. I actually had a letter Christmas Eve, honestly, from the Skipton Building Society, because I have some investments. And it was the sort of letter that filled you with trepidation, because they're going to do something I should be excited about. And there was a telephone number to ring, which I did eventually, the day after Boxing Day, and I said, look, I hope you don't mind me saying this, I don't really want to be excited. I just want to know where things are, and please, could you not just go on as it is, because I'm very happy with things as they are. Well, they did explain why they were going to change things, and it actually made some sense, but why didn't they just say that in the letter? And in fact, the very nice lady I spoke to said, if I had some of the letters we wrote, I wouldn't like them either. So there we are. Change, of course, can sometimes be very, very slow, if we're lucky, and gradual. And we don't even notice it sometimes. A friend of mine always used to say, it'll be just the same in 100 years' time. And what she meant, of course, was that many of the situations which we face in life are universal. They will always be there. So there will always be love and loss, birth and death, good people and, sadly, not so good people. But there is an upside to this, which is that if nothing is permanent, then it doesn't last forever. So whether what we're experiencing is good and joyous or bad and sad, it will indeed pass in due course, and life will move on. So storms can be weathered, and dark days eventually put behind us, though it may take time to do so. Wherever we are now, will in turn be superseded. And so what we need to hold on to is hope, and we need to have the faith to steer us through both the journey now and that which lies ahead. And so thirdly, as people of faith, and I think this is the most important thing, we must never give up on hope. The book of Revelation, which is, I think many would see it as the most mysterious book, really, in the whole Bible, was actually written for the earliest Christian churches in Asia Minor, what is now Turkey. And it was, of course, part of the Roman Empire, where worship of the emperor was the important thing. The emperor was a god, so therefore you had to worship him. And you can only imagine the stress and pressure that this put on these tiny little Christian communities, learning to live with a different sort of faith. And, of course, if they were found out, the consequences were absolutely dire. John's vision of the new Jerusalem with the promise, "Behold, I make all things new," pointing to a life where there would be no more sadness, pain or tears, was something that they needed to hold on to then, and I think we need to hold on to now. So is it a vain hope? Many people would say that it is. But personally, I have more faith in the promises of God than I do in the promises and predictions of many politicians. I shall name no names. But there's still one more thing to be said, I think. For however firm our faith and our understanding and acceptance of the purposes of God, we cannot allow ourselves simply to be passive bystanders who simply watch the turmoil around us and assume that God will eventually sort it out. That's not what we're here for. We may accept that for everything there is a season and a time for everything under heaven, but there is never a time for the sort of injustice, bigotry and prejudice which continues to become increasingly blatant. On his visit to Norwich last year, Archbishop Justin Welby made reconciliation the central theme of the events in which he took part, beginning with an inspirational ecumenical service at the Roman Catholic Cathedral, which I was able to attend. It was very short, but it was wonderful. But I think that reconciliation goes beyond better relations within the Christian Church or between Christianity and other faiths. It's got to be much bigger than that. It's really about our relations with other people, not just within our own church, but with the wider community and the people we see every day. You would be amazed, well, perhaps you wouldn't be, I don't know, but you'd be amazed how rude people can be to shop assistants. Marks and Spencer's is my local shop, really, and so I know some of the assistants very well. They've been there for years, and little stories trickle out, or you see somebody in front of you in the queue at the checkout. I'm just astounded that people can, you know, they just think, well, because you're a shop assistant, you're nothing. It's absolutely dreadful. And we had a cleaner who worked for us for a while, who, until she left because she was having a baby. And in fact, rather sweetly, she came round with her little one and a gift this year. And on it, she makes things. She's a craft person, really. And it said, it was so nice to know such nice people. And she used to say to me, "You're so kind." I said, "No, I'm just me." But she had employers she worked for an agency, who were absolutely dreadful and expected her to do more and more in the time available. And I just don't understand people like that. You know, it's just not how I do things. It's about how we live with other people, those around us. Yes, we have to be accepting to refugees. Yes, we have to be welcoming to people from different cultural backgrounds and different outlooks. That's very important. But beneath that is a lower level with the people we would normally be with. And I think it's a good thing if we think about how we relate to everybody. It's awful, actually, when you go to the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital and you see notices up saying, "Please do not abuse our staff." We have at least one thing in common, our humanity. And that is the basis from which we should start. This Christmas, church leaders spoke about the darkness in our world. Particularly, I think it was Justin Welby who mentioned the terrorist attack recently in London. But they also spoke about light. Pope Francis said, "There is darkness in human hearts, yet the light of Christ is greater still. And Justin Welby said, light is life and love and brings hope. In the presence of the light of Jesus Christ, dark is ultimately powerless. The twin spectres of extremism and nationalism are a frightening prospect, as the history of the last century taught us. And that's why I think the words of "It Came Upon the Midnight Clear" have a particular resonance year on year. Oh, hush the noise, ye men of strife, and hear the angels sing. So we step into 2020, perhaps with some trepidation, as well as curiosity as to how things will work out. And we know it's up to us to show Christian values in our lives and to do what we can to stand up to the attitudes which are so dangerous. We have to be prepared to step up to the mark and set that example. But let the last word be the complete poem quoted by George VI. It was written in 1908 by a woman called Minnie Louise Haskins, and she had studied and then later taught at the London School of Economics, and she died in 1957. And it was apparently our Queen, as a young woman, who found it and gave it to her father. And so it was part of a very special bond between them. And it's called God Knows. I said to the man who stood at the gate of the year, give me a light that I may tread safely into the unknown. And he replied, go out into the darkness and put your hand into the hand of God. That shall be to you better than light and safer than a known way. So I went forth, and finding the hand of God, trod gladly into the night, and he led me towards the hills and the breaking of dawn in the lone east. So heart, be still. What need our little life, our human life, to know, if God hath comprehension? In all the dizzy strife of things both high and low, God hideth his intention. God knows. His will is best. The stretch of years which wind ahead so dim to our imperfect vision are clear to God. Our fears are premature. In him all time hath full provision. Then rest. Until God moves to lift the veil from our impatient eyes, when as the sweeter features of life's stern face we hail, fair beyond all surmise, God's thought around his creatures our mind shall fill. Amen.